Guardian Unlimited.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Jones. You're listening to Guardian Unlimited, and this is another of our unique podcasts about great exhibitions. And this is really a great exhibition. We're standing outside the National Gallery looking over Trafalgar Square, and we're about to go in and see something unbelievable, I hope. A big exhibition of Velázquez, one of the absolute all-time great artists. So let's go in and see.
Welcome to the National Gallery.
It's a tremendous event, even just physically in the nature of it. We're in the National Gallery. I'm standing at the moment in the great Sackler Room where they have Stubbs' Whistle Jacket and paintings by Gainsborough and Turner. And there's a huge wall being built right across the middle of it, because this exhibition is not taking place in the Sainsbury Galleries, which a lot of people do find to be stuffy and claustrophobic and not that great for exhibitions. And it seems the National Gallery may agree with them, because they've decided to have this major exhibition actually in the main galleries upstairs in the National Gallery. They've moved out the Impressionists for a while.
And it's high on the left, just to the right and centre.
As you can hear, they're still putting the finishing touches to the exhibition.
That's perfect.
Velázquez exhibition through here.
And now we're going to go through these wonderful, actually very grand rooms. Even now, just looking through the glass doors, I can see what a grand space they've created. And I can see Dawson Carr, who's the curator of this exhibition. He also curated the Caravaggio exhibition at the National Gallery. We can see him through the glass doors, and we're going to go and say hello to him now and let him introduce his show. Hi. Hello, Dawson. Hi. Nice to meet you again. Could you tell us, first of all, why you wanted to put on this exhibition at the National Gallery?
Well, we have a collection of 9 works by Velázquez in the National Gallery. It's by far the finest, the most extensive collection of Velázquez's works outside the Prado. And they're very beloved pictures in this nation, and we wanted to set them into context. That is one of the things that we do best at the National Gallery. In the tradition of the El Greco show, the Titian, Rubens shows, this is the core of our exhibition program, setting our works into context.
I guess that strength of the National Gallery is very clear in this first room of the exhibition, which is the early career of Velázquez in Seville.
Indeed, the finest group of Velázquez's early works are in Britain, and we've gotten all of them from the various collections around Britain. And in addition to those, we've added key works that demonstrate his development, his early development in Seville, and shed light on the brilliance of the pictures in the National Galleries, both here and in Edinburgh.
There's biographical information about him, but there's not much intimate information about him, is there?
Very little, but that's not at all unusual for an artist of his time. Things just weren't written down. We have a good deal more than most because of his father-in-law and his great teacher, Francisco Pacheco, who wrote a treatise and told us a lot about the young Velázquez. His teacher, he was an artist who still believed that the purpose of art was to idealize, to start with nature as the foundation, but then to improve it with the mind and the intellect of the artist. Velázquez's work is really much more grounded in reality. Ordinary people are the foundation of his art as well. Ordinary situations, very simple. Something like the water cellar from Apsley House, a common scene on the streets of hot Seville. But he doesn't judge him. Water cellars in literature of the time are usually cast as rogues.
Well, let's go and have a closer look at that painting, because it is an extraordinary picture. If I could just describe it now, what we're looking at. I mean, it's an old man in a brown smock, and he's holding the picture in a way is dominated by the jug, this wonderful rounded earthenware form which Velázquez captures. I mean, you can see the drops of water on it. It's got an absolute reality to it. It's also an absolute sense of volume that reminds you of Cézanne or something. Looks forward towards Cézanne. There are boys in the background buying water. But I mean, this really is, as you say, this typifies his naturalism.
Velázquez finds elemental importance in it, in the mundane. It naturally centers, as you said, on the depiction of water. He's selling a glass of water to this young boy, and in the glass is a fig to sweeten the water. And the play of light through that glass and around that fig within the glass is a great tour de force of painting. And as you said, in the foreground, you have this wonderful jug. And in the firing, there's been a dent made in the jug, and he records this brilliantly in the trickles of water down this porous surface. And here we see the artist beginning to explore aspects of technique. He scumbles the striations in the drug on with dragged strokes of paint that coalesce into this marvelous vision of reality. And when you get up close, you can see those striations. He's beginning to stress the act of painting, even in these very early things.
Well, let's move on now. And clearly what happened with Velázquez was that he went from Seville, he got a job in Madrid, he became a court painter to the Spanish king. He had this natural genius, which obviously made him a cinch for that kind of a job. He was very restless and very sophisticated in the way he developed. He didn't stick with the sort of Caravaggesque naturalism, this earthy style. It's always there, but he developed and he set that style against what he started to see of Rubens, Titian, artists who he could see in Madrid. And then, very important in his career, he was sent to Italy on court business. He was actually a very adept courtier, apparently. So he was in Rome, which was the centre of the art world at that time. That introduced him to a kind of historical scale of work, a more dramatic, epic style of canvas. And we're in the second room now, and we're seeing, which are actually the classic, the fruits that he came back with of that trip that he did, I think, just after he came back. I'm sure Dawson will clarify it. I'm looking at the forge, Apollo visiting the forge of Vulcan, which is, it's a great Baroque mythological theme, a story from Ovid, Greek mythology. And the god is very much a god with a halo around his head and light shining. He's the sun god, so his head is shining. But he's in a forge, which is just a contemporary 17th century forge, and there are working class men just looking at him, and they've been interrupted in their labours. The metal on the forge is red hot. They're making armour. This is a crucial work in his career, isn't it?
It's really the one where he comes into his own as a great history painter. You see him beginning to adapt and learn from classical rhetorical gesture. The figure of Apollo, the idealized god, essentially takes the form of the famous Apollo Belvedere, which he would have seen in the Vatican. Sure. But the rest of the men are very naturalistically portrayed, including the god Vulcan, who is shown at his forge, reeling back as he gets the news that his wife is having an affair with Mars. And the reactions of the men, it's dawning on them, and it flows across the surface of the painting as they respond and react in different ways. Those figures show that Velázquez is going to remain grounded in naturalism, but he's beginning to play with concepts of appearance, contrasting that idealized Apollo with these earthy workers.
It somehow has the rawness and immediacy of those early works and the dignity and nobility of history painting. It's a sort of an impossible paradox that I don't think anyone else achieved.
No one else really does. And he, in this work, records the kinds of gestures and expressions that we still recognize. This is completely readable to a modern audience. That's what makes Velázquez so relevant to our world, is that he takes this scene from classical mythology and humanizes it.
But if we go through into the final room, I guess we'll see the final fruits of genius. The exhibition, I think, well, emotionally for me, it ends with Mars and Venus, gods who had a dalliance. Venus was married to Vulcan, and then she committed adultery with Mars. And what we're actually seeing in that previous painting is when Vulcan's getting the bad news, isn't it?
That's right. And here we see a picture well known to a British audience, the very greatest Velázquez in Britain, the Rookby Venus, where she's reclining on her bed, and Cupid is holding up a mirror, and we're not allowed to remain voyeurs. She's looking out at us. We've juxtaposed it with the great Mars from the Prado. and who's sitting on the edge of a bed, his loins hastily covered, a pink bedsheet around him, and it really represents the moment after Venus has been carried away by her husband, and he's left to ponder his chagrin.
Obviously, that's obviously what's going on here. To the modern viewer, you can't, at the same time, you also can't help seeing it as a slightly subversive take on Mars. I mean, it, to me, looks like a very seedy mercenary soldier that's been pulled in off the street. He's just been having sex with a prostitute, maybe, you know, blowing his wages. He really cuts a very dismal figure. Given other than his body is heroic. I mean, of course, you know. I mean, his tummy's a bit flabby. Actually.
Indeed, no, he's kind of middle aged. He's not the burly soldier anymore. He's a bit deflated here, but the deflation has come from his defeat by lust rather than in battle.
It's this irony of Velázquez. I can't think of any other word to describe it, but he looks at the world ironically, and that's why he's a very contemporary artist for us.
Again, a humanizing artist. This is a truly human Mars. He tends to humanize the gods all the way through, and one sees it in the painting that
right
we
next.
Close the exhibition with.
Well, talking about humanity, but right next to Mars, the painting that seems to sort of close the show is Aesop. And for me, this is the most sort of irreducibly human of all his paintings, where you have an old man, but it's a very wrinkled, time-battered face and wonderful sort of silver wash of hair, and holding this wonderful mouldy book. It's supposed to be Aesop who wrote Aesop's Fables, so it's a kind of, it's a legendary Greek fabulist. Aesop's fables are grounded in the everyday, aren't they? It's almost you could almost say this is an allegory of Velázquez's belief in the real and the
indeed.
Ordinary.
And the painting is often interpreted as Velázquez representing Velázquez himself, because we see Aesop with this wry, almost disdainful expression, the great capturer of human foibles. And like Velázquez, it's something that is grounded in the real world, grounded in a world that we can all relate to, and we do hope people will enjoy. I think that they will be able to follow the development of this most amazing painter, who in this last room shows that he can achieve the most miraculous effects with the greatest economy of means, with the least amount of paint he can put on.